Hand Gab, he's Jules. Jules, it's the first week of the Premier League Woo-hoo! Season, the Bundesliga season, the Ligue 1 season. No wonder it's blue skies over West London. But to bring us back down from all the excitement, here's Mark Ogden. Ogden, you have a shirt that kind of matches the mood of United fans right now as the Erik ten Hag era begins.
Not black, dark blue, but it's close enough to be, it wasn't a good start, was it?
Jules, beaten 2-1 at home by Brighton. Yep. Now, I'm going to go on a limb and say something. I don't think they played well, obviously. We saw some curious decisions.
Yeah.
Am I stupid for suggesting that maybe if Rashford buries his chances and the Bruno Fernandes
the chance that's offside. Yeah.
Maybe we don't, but I mean, the VAR, whatever.
Yeah.
If they win the game, are people singing a different tune, or is it just that the performance and the result were just the throwaway?
For me, it was both. Not good performance, not good from Ten Hag, certainly not good enough from the first game. I don't understand the Christian Eriksen as a force number nine.
He had no Anthony Martial. That's his centre forward.
Okay, you can't play Rashford as centre forward. You can't play Garnacho, who's trained with you all week as your starter number nine, and then suddenly he's on the bench. Even Ten Hag himself said, oh yeah, Christian played there a long, long time ago. So because he played there 10 years ago or something, he can play there now for United in a game like this against a team, by the way, who you know would cause you problems because they are a very good team and they play really good football, especially away from home when they've got space.
I mean, I guess the idea, when I saw this, I thought my idea is maybe Eriksen drops off close to Bruno Fernandes and it becomes a little bit like the 4-2-2-2, the 4-2-2 formation that we see sometimes. We saw from Bayern this weekend. That's not what happened. And on top of that, Sancho and Rashford's finishing was not good. And Sancho, we saw very little of him.
Yeah, I mean, Rashford, he just looks so fragile, doesn't he, in terms of his confidence. And I think Sancho the same. This is the problem that everyone talks about pre-season. It was a promising pre-season. But pre-season doesn't tell you anything. It can be a real kind of misguided, pointed towards the season. They won the first three games, then drew and then lost. And they went into the season a bit of a dip. And I think Ten Hag said after the game that he kind of saw this coming. Well, if you see it coming, do something about it, which is more promising than what happened yesterday. It was a really, really poor performance, and alarm bells are ringing again already.
The odd thing, obviously, is when you play a false nine, if that's what you want to call it, you need to spend a lot of time on the training pitch in terms of movement to make it work. And obviously, Eriksen missed out on a big chunk of the preseason.
Yeah.
Now, they do have a guy who scored a lot of goals for them in the past, scored a lot of goals throughout his career, Cristiano Ronaldo. He came off the bench not match fit, supposedly, after he told us how did it make sense? We can't slaughter Ten Hag for starting Cristiano on the bench.
No,
can we?
I don't think so. Not with a week. Sorry, not with having just trained a week in terms of fitness wise, not even the work with the rest of the team. I'm just talking fitness. His own fitness.
Can you explain this? Because the world says, oh, but he's so fit. When he was putting on his shoes, he made sure he took off his shirt and stuff so we could see he trains on his own. Ten Hag had said, fitness isn't a problem with him because he's so such a great pro.
Yeah, you cannot
it is
ask.
Different from playing with 11 guys on a training pitch. It's a different kind of fitness.
And you can have great abs and great six packs or even eight packs in Cristiano's case and not be much fit just yet. For a Premier League match, he can play Sunday League football, I'm sure, but not there. And on the back of the Rayo Vallecano incident and the fact that he missed preseason as well, the tour in preseason. So if you add all of those things, you can't start a game like this.
Right, but Diogo Dalot can start and Christian Eriksen.
He went on tour.
I take your point. I just wonder with the Rayo thing, we've talked about that to death, but him coming out, so it wasn't just Cristiano, it was a bunch of other guys.
True. But
fine.
But missing the tour was the big the big thing here.
Right. Can we give some love to Brighton before we go on to Arnautovic?
Absolutely. I mean, Brighton, as you saw last season, the 4-0 win at the Amex, they're a very good team. And then, Graham Potts had them organised. Gross did what he always does against United scores.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching the game in the press room at West Ham and I was without the commentary on, so it was hard to kind of get a flavour of it. But all I saw was Brighton shirts on the edge of the Man United box, which is never a good sign if you're Man United at Old Trafford. So Brighton are a good team, but Man United in the first game under the new manager shouldn't be losing at home to Brighton, no matter how good Brighton are.
As you know, I've speculated that Cristiano Ronaldo will be elsewhere on September 1st, which means leaves a whole bunch of money to spend on another forward.
Yeah.
Looks as if even if he stays, for now, they move for another forward. It's Marko Arnautovic, who's obviously 33 years old. This falls into the short-term signing category, but it's an expensive short-term signing.
It would cost them 15 million.
He's 33 years old.
Yeah. But my question is not even about the money or the age. Is why are you going for Arnautović? But I don't understand the recruitment policy here. I'm sorry.
Listen, I mean, Ighalo, Falcao, now Arnautović, there'll be others.
Cavani,
Zlatan. Ever since Man United signed Robin van Persie, they haven't, and he was even a short-term buy as well because he was bought for one particular reason. 10 years, they haven't looked to the future. They haven't signed a proper centre-forward.
All right, let's talk about the tall Austrian man, once dubbed the heir apparent to Zlatan.
Yeah.
Maybe because of the way his name ends. And we, obviously, he's familiar to fans of the Premier League, obviously fans. In Italy, we saw him last season at Bologna. He did well.
He scored 14 goals.
I think those have to be put in context a little bit of the type of season Bologna had. But, you know, you're getting somebody who's tall, who's strong, who's technically gifted, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
But who hasn't always been super consistent, especially when he was younger, and had disciplinary issues when he was younger. Now, I always take that with a grain of salt because I tell myself, all right, he was younger, right? We all did silly things when we were younger. And now at 33, he hears the clock ticking and so on, and he's serious and he tries to be a serious pro. And that's what he's done the last couple of years. Why do you hate this signing?
I just don't understand how we got into this place. And this is where we go back to the recruitment policy and what the hell have they done in the last 2 months. Because on August the 7th, if you start thinking, as Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, Marko Arnautović is the answer here of our problems going forward to score goals. He's the future, because why would you not sign someone for the future?
Well, he's not the future. He's the immediate future in the sense that...
But why do you need someone short-term then?
Because...
Why?
Because otherwise you go into the season with Martial and Rashford.
No, but...
And now Christian Eriksen as your
forward. We've said all summer, they need more bodies at centre-forward. But go and sign someone that is not a short-term option and that is better than him.
I'm going to bring up my favorite word, amortization, and I'm going to go and tie it back to the other tall, strong, technically gifted goal-scoring centre-forward that they have, that Cristiano Ronaldo fella. I would assume that it's because they have a lot of money tied up in Cristiano's contract. It's just 1 year, but you're talking 30-odd million, right, with the amortization and the wages. It's clear that it's been reported that Cristiano wants to leave because he wants to play Champions League football, prepare for the World Cup, whatever. Fine. It's been difficult to move him for all the reasons that we talked about. I still love the romantic love story between him and Carlo, and maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't, at Real Madrid. But if you're United, you have a problem because this is a big asset. It's not an asset you can sell quickly. Now, if they had sold him at the end of the season, if Cristiano had found a buyer, then they would have said, oh, look, we cleared 30 million in wages and amortization. We can go out and can compete.
Okay, so now there's no money left, you mean, for a striker?
I think someone
better than Arnautović.
Well, it's not that there's no money left, but like rather than going and blowing 100 million, 150 million now on somebody who might not be your top choice, maybe you wait a year and then you see where you are then.
But this is not how you run your football club.
They can't keep thinking like this. I mean, we discussed before, I mean, all these players they've signed in the last 10 years that have been short-term fixes when it's been clearly obvious for so long they need a centre-forward. Because, you know, when they last won the league in 2013, they brought in Robin van Persie, who was a success, but it's a short-term success. Wayne Rooney, by that point, was on the way down, a long way. So it was obvious at that point they had to start planning for the future.
Right.
They never did. They brought in Falcao, they brought in...
Falcao got injured.
Yeah, but he was injured before he came. I mean,
at his peak.
He spent a year trying to get fit. Then, you know... Zlatan, which was a success, but Zlatan was, what, 35, 36? Ighalo, I mean, there's probably others that I've forgotten about. Cavani.
Yeah, Cavani.
Now, I mean, I spoke to Ed Woodward in January before he left, and one thing he said was, you know, what this team really needs right now is a centre-forward. And it's no secret over the last 3 or 4 years, they have tried for Harry Kane, but they were never, ever going to get him because they never had this horrible word project to offer him. Now,
same with Haaland. They tried Haaland.
Yeah, they tried Haaland, and that was like the guy who failed to sign the Beatles. I mean, they had Haaland in the room, Solskjaer spoke and did all the groundwork, and because they wouldn't insert a release clause, which Dortmund were happy to do, they missed out. Now, if you're Man United or a club of that stature, don't you take a gamble? Think, right, we'll put the release clause in, but we'll be so successful you'll never want to leave. That's what Man City are gambling on now. City think, right, you might want to leave in 4 years, but you won't do. We'll keep you for 10. Now, United need to plan for the future. Now, Benjamin Sesko is a guy they're looking at, and apparently he's a very, very good player. But they've got competition, and the way United are, they'll be too slow, they'll miss out, and they'll end up with Arnautovic. Now, I mean, Arnautovic, the way you described him before, the big build-up, it sounded like Eric Cantona, a guy with, you know, but it's, that's where the comparison stops, because Cantona had something to offer. Arnautovic is, you might as well sign Mario Balotelli. It's just a bad idea.
I feel like you guys are just going to dump all over United, so I kind of feel the need that I'm going to be lawyerly here and put their, you know, my feelings here. But I think they need another body. And, you know, you can go and you can deride all these signings like Cavani or Rigolo. I think they would have been worse off without them. If you can't get somebody who's going to project as a starter and be part of the plan going forward, I don't think there's anything wrong with adding depth. We can debate whether Arnautovic is the right guy. I think 50 million for guys 33 is a lot of money.
This is not 31st of August either, Gab. Don't tell me there's no time to sign a better striker that fits your team better for a longer for the future more than just the short term. This screams to me like a 31st of August. We need someone. What can we do? Arnautovic, he knows Steve McLaren. He played for him. He knows Erik ten Hag. No problem. Let's do this quickly. Bologna will sell because we're going to pay over the odds, because 50 million is over the odds.
Yeah.
But we, August the 8th, come on.
I think what this goes to show you, though, is I think they didn't take perhaps a hard enough line. And by hard enough, I don't mean be mean to Cristiano. I mean make a decisive decision on Cristiano earlier.
But this
and
is
And I think this is what set them up. If they had said to George Mendes, like, look, George, sorry, Cristiano's not going to play this year. Now, none of this Erik ten Hag's going to fit him in the system. Go find another club because he's not going to play, right? You either grab your privates and you say that, or you say, we have Cristiano for another year. Eric, suck it up, make it work with Cristiano. Instead, we have this weirdo situation where, you know, they need that insurance, and that's Arnautovic. I still think if Cristiano goes, they might still have the scope to go and bring somebody else in. Mm. But obviously the clock is ticking, and it's a tough gamble to make, and you wonder about the people who are making the decisions there.
They should have sat down end of May, beginning of June, the club, Ten Hag, George Mendes, has said, right, what's happening? This is what's happening, and resolved it then. Ten Hag should have been boldish. Ten Hag should have said, I don't want this hanging over the start of the season. But he's left it and let it to happen. So although he's a new manager, and you have to give him time and, you know, and credit in the bank because he's new, he should have had that big decision, end of May, beginning of June, what is happening with Ronaldo? Deal with it there and then either get rid or sign him, keep him at the club. Now, I'm like you, Gab, I think he will leave at the end of the window. I think there's 4 weeks to go. Clubs, players, agents panic, and I think something will happen. And I do think that Real Madrid is a good option. I'm not suggesting it's going to happen, but I do think that because of the history...
It's a good option for Ronaldo, whether it's a good option for Real Madrid.
I don't think it depends on the terms. Yeah, but I just don't see how he stays. I just don't see how it works that he stays. The player that doesn't want to be there. The manager doesn't really want him. He doesn't really fit in with him. He's not going to be part
of the long-term team that you're building, and he affects the way you play.
That's
what it boils down to. They've been linked with somebody else, which shocked me, but The Athletic reporting it this morning. I mean, I think they're doing cartwheels in Turin, if this is true. They've been linked with Adrian Rabiot. Can you work this one out?
It cannot be. I mean, I think they need better play in midfield, that's for sure. And again, this chase for Frankie de Jong for 2 months now, where nothing's happening, and yet they don't sign anybody else because maybe they think miraculously something will resolve this problem or this transfer. But Rabiot, come on. Again, I can name you many midfielders
who are right now better. He's a World Cup winner, yeah?
Yeah. No, but I mean, he's one of my boys. And listen, he grew up literally 3 streets down from where I did. So.
And he's lived in Manchester before.
Yeah, of course. He was at City when he was a kid. So.
But weirdly, he was never in Holland or at Ajax or at Bayern, to my knowledge.
No, he wasn't. So. It wasn't. I don't know.
Man United, they've got a problem right now. We know that the finances aren't particularly fluid. They've got issues in terms of the money coming in. It's not the Glazers have got problems with paying for the updating the ground, and there's all sorts of issues.
They may need to take smaller dividends this year.
What? There's absolutely no more money or what?
I think the money is beginning to be tight at Man United,
right,
because
okay,
you know they're no longer able to compete as you maybe were in the early stages, because City is stronger, PSG and etc. But the Man United, they can find money if they need to. So I think they really have to go out and say, like, West Ham, how much for Declan Rice? Because I think with Declan Rice, there's an interesting situation. He's got 2 years in his contract. We know he earns a lot less than his England teammates. Mm. And he will be at some point be irritated by the fact that he's playing so well for West Ham. He goes to Man United, he could treble, quadruple his wages.
Yeah.
Now, if he waits a year, you might think, well, Man City or Liverpool, but Liverpool want Jude Bellingham. Man City have got their Calvin Phillips, Rodri.
Sorry, what's the problem with Liverpool?
Well, if they go for Jude Bellingham next year, they don't want Declan Rice as well. So I'm just trying to look at the
or
future.
Maybe you go for both.
No, but it's Chelsea and Man United, yeah, basically. Yeah. And so if United want to sign a player that will help transform them for the next 5 years, go for him now, because in a year's time, right, Chelsea might be in a position to sign him.
We were, Mark and I were doing some role play before, not of that nature, but okay, a different nature. Mark reckons it might take, you could get him for 100 million. Well, let's just say, we're just back of the envelope, right? And Mark reckons that, correct me if I'm wrong here, it would cost you about 200 grand a week or 10 million a year, right?
Yeah.
So through the magic of amortization, if it's a 5-year deal, he's costing you 30 million a year, right? Which is roughly what Cristiano makes. So in that sense, it would be a perfect fit.
And it's a statement as well. It's a statement that United are looking at the best young players again, and they need somebody that's energized. I don't think he's a world-class player, but he's better than what they've got, and I think he would take them to another level and just bring something to it.
I think
in that role, there's the other guy, the guy they've been pursuing all summer, Frankie de Jong. We're going to get into some of the Barcelona stuff later. Mm. It seems to me, and again, I'm going to stick up a little bit for your boy John Murta here and his friend Darren Fletcher. You put your offer in. The screws are tightening on Barcelona, the most recent things. You know, we know that they can't register the players as of now. They need to pull more levers, whatever. Just say, that's the offer. Take it or leave it. Deal with it. Oh, and by the way, Frankie, I know the club owes you money or whatever. We can help out a little bit with that. If you come to us, you'll have a contract and so on. You can pursue them legally, but be aware that, you know, there's no guarantees on that front either.
I think if Frankie de Jong wanted to play for United, he would already be a United player. And I think at some point, if he doesn't want to come, let go and move on to somewhere else. And again, I mean, I've said it 5 times, recruitment policy. Like, I don't understand how you can chase the same player for 8 weeks, because clearly there's something that either they really don't want to sell. And I know Laporta kept saying publicly, he's our player, he doesn't want to leave, we don't want to sell. Okay, maybe he's... This is this old BS, and they have to sell.
As he said, we don't want to sell because...
Yeah, yesterday, I think it would have happened if Frankie really wanted it to happen by now. So I think maybe you should let go and go to another target. But I'm starting to think, is there another target? Is there even a plan B? Because they've chased the same player for so long that it looks to me like, well, they've got no idea who to go, what to do next if really Frankie de Jong is not coming.
Because it's been driven by Ten Hag, and I think Ten Hag has become so powerful so quickly that they're frightened to say no. I mean, this whole Arnautovic thing, there's a manager and there's a transfer committee who's supposed to have an equal kind of veto. If one target isn't... Like Mourinho had it, you know, they vetoed a couple... I think Perisic was one that they wouldn't sign because they didn't... And a couple of defenders, maybe Boateng. Mm. No, doesn't work for us. Who's telling Ten Hag that Arnautovic doesn't work for us? So if he's...
It might work.
But if he wants De Jong, who's telling Ten Hag, look, it's not happening, he's stringing us along, Barca's stringing us along, let's move on.
I want to bring it back to what we actually saw on the pitch. I thought the Lisandro Martinez-Harry Maguire partnership clearly needs work.
Like, yeah.
When the movement's all over the shop and they're crossing... Sometimes it is hard to say, to decide who to blame between the two of them, right? Because obviously back fours work in unison, especially central defenders. So I don't want to pick out necessarily one or the other. Obviously Maguire had a difficult season last year. But my obvious question is, if you have issues in the middle of the park, as they clearly had, why not play Lisandro Martinez in midfield, where he's played a big chunk of his career, where he's already familiar with the system?
Yeah.
Because playing center back for Ajax, and obviously he's done that too, but is very different than playing center back for Manchester United.
I think it might come down to that.
And you have Varane, right? I mean, he may have not have been fully fit this weekend because the man's never fully fit, but, you know, except for during the World Cup.
Yeah. When he matters the most.
I think we're looking at the wrong area. I think what will make a big difference to Man United's back four is a commanding goalkeeper. If they get a commanding goalkeeper in that can organise the back four...
Wait, now De Gea has the problem too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Part of the problem.
But one of the problems, because he never comes off his line, the defence drop deep, they invite more pressure, which means that the likes of Maguire and Martinez and Varane are constantly having to clear the lines and bombarded. He doesn't communicate very well. And we saw some of the footage of De Gea's distribution yesterday. It's awful. Now, imagine that Man United team with an Edison or an Alisson Becker behind them. It would transform the defence and transform the team. But for whatever reason... Whether De Gea's some sort of sacred cow or something, he'd never ever has the spotlight on him, or is the player of the year again? Because he has to make so many saves because the defence is sitting back so much. They need to address the goalkeeper situation.
I have to say I'm with Ogie on De Gea. The fact that he's on 350,000 a week and had such a long-term contract, he was unsellable for so many, so they had to stick
with
him.
And he still is. He still is unsellable, right?
Yeah. But I would hope that people at the club have realised, what we're talking about, and at some point wanted to change keepers, just couldn't.
And again, maybe I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt here, that whatever issues you've highlighted with De Gea, and by the way, I think if you make a list of things United need to fix, I'm not sure De Gea is in the top 10.
I agree, but he's a big one.
They said this is not something that we can fix. This is not something we can fix because he has this enormous contract and we simply cannot shift him, right?
True. But don't give him a new one, that's the problem, because he'll have a good half a season. Oh, there you go, David De Gea.
I would like to see Lisandro Martinez in midfield at some point. The problem is, you go to Brentford next weekend, which, I mean, you know what kind of game to expect.
Well, maybe Varane will be fit.
Then it's Liverpool at home. Yeah, but I think to integrate Lisandro Martinez in midfield in that team, I think you still need a bit of time to do it.
I'm sorry. Take a step back here, right? You're concerned about the amount of time it'll take him to integrate in midfield. But then I look at this and I say, who is United's best defender when everybody's fully fit? Varane, yeah? Best centre-back?
I would think so.
They don't make that stupid face.
When 4 years ago. But no, Varane wasn't great last season.
Okay.
He can't turn, honestly. He gets
who's a better centre-back at United than Varane?
Exactly.
All right.
But we're trying to be helpful here. They're all as bad as each other.
I'm trying to be honest.
You sound like a vox pop man in the street.
I'm trying to be honest.
Politicians. Okay, so if Varane is... when everybody's fit in your fantasy world, he is your best defender, right? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming for the time being, Maguire is your other center back because you made him the club captain and you don't want to create a Maguire mess right now.
And then you can go back to left center back as well, left side center back, which is his best position, really.
Exactly, right? So if this is the issue, why are you playing Lisandro Martinez if you're trying to help him settle, in a position where if things go to plan, he won't be playing because Varane and Maguire are better?
It's like when
this is the part I really do not understand.
Maybe he sees Lisandro as a starter at the back, him and Maguire, him and Varane.
Maybe he becomes a modern-day Daley Blind, that's a guy that can play midfield or centre-half but isn't good enough in either position to be a starter. I mean, that is a problem.
Do you know,
United's recruitment, would United be any worse if they'd signed Connor Cody from Wolves ahead of Everton?
Okay, let's stop pulling names out of hands. Connor Cody is not an option at this stage.
But I'm just saying that there are better defenders out there that could actually make them better.
But by the way, I mean, when Maguire and Lisandro Martinez crossed over, I was like, what is going on? Because I understand quickly, you need to work with each other to be a successful pair. But at every age group, and whoever you can play with, you know that this can... You
one can't. Of the two screwed up. They didn't both screw up. Okay?
But you can't at this level. You should know and
know.
Be aware
and
enough.
I'd love to know which one did. And I'm sure Ten Hag has an idea. We touched upon Eriksen. I just want to go back to this playing Eriksen through the middle in a formation. Did he really say Eriksen used to play center forward?
Yeah, a long time ago. He said a long time ago he played there.
Why? When he was playing for middle fart?
No, I guess
at Ajax.
Maybe?
I don't remember him playing center forward at Ajax. Certainly.
No, that's what Ten Hag. I didn't remember either. I have to be honest. But.
I mean, I also wonder. I mean, I assumed, and I was shocked by how far up the pitch he was playing too. He was playing as a center forward.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Like the 4-2-2, maybe you want to try that. Have Sancho and Rashford come from the outside. Fine. I thought that was odd. The thing was really odd. Minute 89, you're losing 2-1, and you make a triple substitution. I can somebody explain this? I understand you're chasing the game, why not make it, if you want to bring fresh legs on, why not do it 10 minutes earlier? Or was the goal, maybe, was he trying to do one of those coaching psychology thing? You guys are all part of the team. Garnacho, Malasia, who's the third guy? Elanga. Yeah. Yes, we're all in this together. You will experience this defeat if it comes, or you will
surely
turn.
Surely not.
Is this what he was doing?
Surely not.
Why?
It made no sense whatsoever. I was screaming at the television to make substitutions. I was like, what is going on here? For once you've got them a little bit under pressure, it's time to go and change things and...
I don't know, maybe it worked for Ajax against Den Bosch, I don't know, but it's not going to work in the Premier League.
Stop it with a Den Bosch. You're so unkind. Okay, let's end this. We've
praise Brighton a little bit. I don't want to get carried away because, you know, I don't think Brighton played necessarily much different than the way they played last season, obviously.
What, when they win 4-0 against United, you mean, last season?
Well, no, I'm talking about most of last season. I'm talking about individual games. It was their first ever win at Old Trafford, I believe.
Ever, yeah.
Moises Caicedo, they look really, really good. But is he that good, or was it a reflection of what was around him?
I don't know. I looked at that Brighton lineup, to be fair, at the start of the game. And
you're like, where's Bissouma?
No, I'm like, this is not very good. They're good players. You know, Trossard is a good player. Welbeck is a decent player. You know, they've growth. And this is not an amazing team.
And yet.
But whether it's United or they will have big results again, and they will finish 9th or 10th or and have a really good season, I think, for what they have and for who they are. But he's still making good players, played really, really well.
Go back to recruitment that we said at the beginning. I know he's now left Dan Ashworth, he's got Newcastle, but the fact that Brighton have brought in and sold for good money Ben White, Cucurella and Bissouma, I mean, probably over £140 million.
Yeah,
something
like that.
That's fantastic recruitment, you know, for little investment, for big return. And obviously United look at different players, they have to have a different standard, but it's all about being sensible and strategic and smart in the market, and Brighton have been and United still aren't.
All right. Despite your shirt, despite the negativity, let's all come up with one positive. Just a little exercise.
Yeah,
let's come up with one positive for United.
Okay.
Can I have some time to think about this one?
What? I'll go first.
Go first, then. I can't wait.
No. I'm going to be serious. Okay, so I'm less concerned about when players miss finishes. So I'm going to say the fact that Rashford got on the end of three balls, screwed them all up. One of them was one where he was set up by Cristiano and whatever. I think that bodes well. I think to me that speaks of somebody who is trying, who's getting more, he's getting into more dangerous areas. And maybe Rashford can be a value added for United this season in a way he wasn't in the last 6 months of last year, or really all of last year. Okay, you've got to come up with one too, and you can't mention Rashford.
I've got even two positive. The first one is you've hit rock bottom already, so the only way is up.
Oh, stop it.
And the other one is that this is good for my boy Martial, because they need him more than ever.
Real positive.
So badly. The positive is Martial coming back, which I think will boost the team.
Oh, dear. So the positive is that United have so few players at the World Cup that by the second half of the season starts to be absolutely flying, because there'll be so much fresher. Rashford, Sancho, people like that, Luke Shaw.
They might go to the World Cup.
Rashford
and
Sancho haven't got the World Cup. No,
you don't know yet.
No, because they've got one. No.
You guys aren't taking this seriously. I'm not going to go and sink the guy out.
All right,
here we go.
Liverpool's the next home game. There's your positive.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, enough United, Jules. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Once again, Jules. No Mbappe, no problem. See, they just sold him. Neymar and Messi play like it's 2015.
Yes.
And Paris Saint-Germain destroy Clermont Foot 5-0 to start the season.
Yeah, it was impressive. And I know it's only Clermont, even with the Argentine guy before. PSG won 4-0 and 6-1 against them last season. So I know that. However, it was still brilliant to see them like that, to see Neymar in that kind of form, one goal and three assists, another hat-trick of assists, by the way, like Messi last season and like Mbappe the season before. Really good with the ball, PSG, collectively, even without the ball, the work that Vitinha did, for example, and then Messi.
Let me talk Vitinha. Let's talk Messi and Neymar.
No, no, I was coming to Messi. Messi with an amazing goal, overhead kick, the first in his career. Even at Barcelona, he was not doing that kind of stuff. The ball from Paredes, the run forward from Messi, the control with the chest, and then the overhead kick. Okay, because he's small, he's not really up in the air like Cristiano or Bale or, you know, even Amara Simba for the PSG fans. But still, it was still good. It was good to see them like that. They both look so sharp.
And the 16-year-old kid made his debut.
Oh, Warren Zaïre-Emery, who is an amazing talent.
What's his name?
Warren is his first name, and then Zaïre-Emery is his double barrel name.
So he's posh.
He's not posh, and he's got nothing to do with Unai Emery.
I just wanted to know,
was your next question.
I know.
But remember the name, Warren Zaïre-Emery, so, amazing talent.
I ran the numbers on this. Last season, Messi and Neymar combined for 20 goals and 19 assists in Ligue 1.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a limb and say they're going to do far better than that this season. And it's amazing what having the summer free can do for older players.
True. And also having a manager with a good idea.
Exactly.
Erling Haaland gets both goals as Manchester City win away at West Ham 2-0. Gab, I guess his Community Shield finishing was not an indication of anything then.
No, and I wrote a whole column making
the point.
And in fact, he scored two goals. He could have easily had four.
Yeah.
The two headers, one which he kind of mishit it, the other one which he missed. He himself has said, "Oh, I need to improve my heading." He said it many times. I think it looks exciting. But I want to also credit in this game the job Joao Cancelo did by stepping into midfield, by being that additional creator. You create this panic in the other team where, you know, at any time the through ball can come and at any time Erling can go through. So it just adds this whole other dimension to City's game, which is really difficult to game plan for because, you know, even if you adjust and they go back and then play down the wing. So well done.
But that second goal was great as well. But I was super disappointed by West Ham and how they allowed Rodri to turn for the second goal, De Bruyne to find Haaland, the run, all of that. It was really poor from West Ham, all around, really.
Wait till avenging Angelo returns. Yeah, and Craig Dawson, of course. Now, this was way, way back on Friday, but Jules, is it fair to say Bayern's 6-1 away demolition of Eintracht, who happen to be the current Europa League champions, by the way, suggests that they're going to be okay in terms of scoring goals this season?
So, 5 goals against Leipzig in the German Super Cup, then 5 at halftime against Frankfurt on Friday, where they were really incredible. That 4-2-2-2, the 4-2-2 was worked so well. I think from Mane to even our friend Pavard, who we've been, you know, quite harsh at time with, and rightly so, it looks great, I have to say. It looks great. The intensity, the passing, the verticality was at times mind-blowing, really, from Bayern.
I'm trying to imagine, and now I think whether this season is a success, and obviously they define success there not by winning the Bundesliga, but by doing something important in Europe, isn't going to depend on the attack. I have no concerns there. Mane's not a center forward. I mean, that's just a label. But it's going to come from the defense. So obviously in this game, you had Pavard with Upamecano and Lucas. At some point, you imagine they're going to integrate De Ligt, Mazraoui, and Gravenberch. I don't know if it's going to be in the 4-2-2-2.
But I think Davis looked like he's back to his best as well.
Yeah, he had a big game. But I think that's going to be the judge of the measure of how well they do this season.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Eintracht, they will face Real Madrid, Gab, in the European Super Cup on Wednesday. I know how much you love making predictions, so go on.
It's like, how do you bounce back from 6-1 home defeat? And now, look, here come Benzema and Vinicius. Maybe the reason I still think this game's worth watching, and I think could be in doubt, is that obviously Real Madrid are going to be behind with their preparation relative to Eintracht. Of course, I believe have two official matches under their belt. It's interesting with Real Madrid. It's been very quiet, I think, on the transfer front. And they said, our business is done. If you look closely, I wonder if their noses aren't getting a little bit longer when they say that. So stay tuned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the Did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
Not the start Liverpool would have wanted as they're held 2-2 at newly promoted Fulham. Jules, Jurgen Klopp said it was a, quote, bad performance, yeah, unquote. And he needs to study and analyze what went wrong.
Yeah.
Can you help him out?
Yeah, I can. I mean, he started by saying that the pitch was slow.
Pitch was
dry. Sorry,
and then
dry.
Fulham trolled them back.
I mean, dry means slow for them. Come on. Then he got trolled by Fulham, you're right. I just think, okay, the theory I had that maybe they did a lot of fitness work in the week after the Community Shield. And that maybe they were a bit tired, and that's why they were off it the first half and like intensity, because this was really bad. I mean, okay, Fulham were up for it and they were there, they were aggressive and they were winning the 50-50s and all of that. But from a Liverpool point of view, it was dire. It was really dreadful. So maybe they were tired, maybe they took the game for granted a little bit. I don't know. But to see Mo Salah having such a quiet first half, for example, you think, like, wow, that didn't happen a lot often in Liverpool.
I think this points to more Darwin Nunez.
Yeah, maybe.
In games like these, anyway.
You expect him then to start against Palace at the weekend?
I think so. I mean, yeah. At some point.
It should, I guess. Right? It should. However, on the other side, Gab, Alexander Mitrovic scored both goals for Fulham. And Gab, people made a big deal of the fact that he scored 43 goals in the Championship last season, but only 3 in the previous year in the Premier League. He's already had 2 this season.
Yeah, look, guess what? They play football in the Championship as well. And this is purely, I think, statistical variance. He's not going to score 43 goals in the Premier League, I don't think. But likely, if he stays fit, he's going to score more than 3. He probably is a 10 to 12 or 10 to 15 type league goal scorer. And that's what he is. I thought he played out of his skin. I thought Marco Silva had him motivated. They got him the right service.
Yeah,
worked really hard off the ball.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, he road-rated Trent Alexander-Arnold, for which we're going, oh, Trent's defending. I'm sorry, there's an aerial battle at the far post between Trent and Mitrovic. Mitrovic will win it every
time. But Trent doesn't even know that he's there. So, you know, just start there. He never looks. He doesn't know that he's there.
I think he knew he was there.
I don't think he knows.
But whatever. You know, for the newly promoted sides, you know, all right, Forest had a rough ride, a very rough ride, I think, at Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Bournemouth and Fulham.
Well done.
Mm. Chelsea are off to a win as Jorginho's penalty is a difference between the two sides away to Everton. Jules, how do they look? Still work to do?
Yeah, plenty.
Just a little bit?
Yeah, I'm still a bit worried, I have to say. I thought Everton were not very good, apart from the usual, you know, let's go for it, we're aggressive with this and that.
Hard to play when you don't have a centre forward.
No, true, which is true. You have to explain to me how can you start Raheem Sterling almost as a second striker behind Kai Havertz, because it didn't make any sense to me, and I thought it was much better when he started playing wide. But to play him in that position, that more central position, I don't know if this idea that Tuchel has for the whole season, if it's a work in progress, I'm not convinced at all by Raheem Sterling behind Kai Havertz would work.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just takes a long time to develop an understanding with those two. There's a ton of work to do. What I liked is when I was watching on television, it's Jorginho versus Pickford.
Yeah.
And the number of references the English commentator made to, oh, look, oh, Robert, you're a 22 final, he missed it. I was happy for Jorginho.
No. Yeah.
Happy for Jorginho.
Yeah, but no. Joan Laporta says he's confident Barcelona will be able to register all their new signings, and plus, by the way, the current players who've extended the deals. Gab, will he need to pull more leavers, though?
He's going to need a
Where's
whole
the money
room
gonna come
full
from?
Of leavers. Look, he can still sell Depay and De Jong, right? I think, back of the envelope calculation, but I'm assuming you could get 40 to 50 for Depay. And, you know, De Jong, maybe 80,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, 70,
and then,
80.
the savings on their wages, and then you have a net turnover of 150, and that's without pulling more levers. The big thing, as was reported in Spain, was part of the thing was when they sold their TV rights, they did something where they created another company, and they put 150 million in the company, and then they added that 150 million to the money they got from the company. Yeah. And La Liga said,
we saw
so
you.
It's tough. I don't know. Look, I said this before. I think this is a risky strategy. I think this is an unnecessary strategy to bring Barcelona back. I think it just puts a tremendous amount of pressure on some of your veteran players as well to take pay cuts. I wouldn't have gone down this road. We'll see how it goes. Certainly,
the clock is ticking as well.
The clock is ticking, and Laporte is taking, I think, a big gamble for his own rep.
Do you think it's possible that they may start the season on Saturday, I think, against Rayo Vallecano, without any of the new signing, and no Dembele either, and no Sergio Roberto, who are the two extending their deal that they can't be registered right now?
No, because I think they're much closer than that. Okay. So I think it's a graduated thing, but I think it's going to be like last year, where you know they didn't register Aguero until later, for example. Borussia Dortmund beat Bayer Leverkusen 1-0 on Saturday. Jules, not a great performance, but 3 points, and Anthony Modeste is reportedly on his way.
Yeah, Modeste is on his way.
Answer to all your problems, 34.
Not really, but again, it's a bit like the Arnautovic situation.
Someone.
They need someone because Haller, obviously we know, with the illness, and Modeste has proven it in the Bundesliga, so he would be maybe a good backup or a good, just short fix for now. It was good to see Adeyemi scoring, I guess, his first goal, if you give it to him.
Marco Reus.
And you know, this, even if you don't play well, even if there's still problems, even defensively at times, you look a bit shaky again. For Terzic, I think you take the 3 points and you say, you know what, we know this is a work in progress, and you keep it.
They're resilient. This was a game that last year felt that, like Bayer Leverkusen would have equalized. Yeah, and I thought Schlotterbeck looked very good.
Yeah, no. Antonio Conte doesn't start any of his newcomers, and Tottenham destroy Southampton 4-1 after being 1-0 down as well. Gab, does this mean he didn't need to whinge about strengthening the squads?
Well, if you play Southampton every week. No, by the way, I should brand this. Spurs won 22 games in the league last season, but only 4 without Son and Kane scoring. And
that's true,
And they didn't score in this one either. Which
I know,
is weird. I think Antonio Conte thinks that one of his skills is getting clubs to go and buy players for him, because if he doesn't, he walks out, right? And obviously, the club backed him with a lot of money, more money than they backed Mourinho with. Equally, though, I think his other great skill is working with players who maybe are a little bit on the sidelines, maybe had a difficult time, and make them better. And you look at the performance of Ryan Sessegnon in this game, as well as also on the other flank. I thought Emerson also had a big, big game.
Kulusevski.
And obviously Kulusevski, you know, you kind of saw it coming. That's the other thing he does really, really well. So he's had the whole summer. Mm. I think this could really, you know, help narrow the gap with the top two.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm with you. Let's roll the clock back to Friday in Arsenal's 2-0 win away to Crystal Palace. Thoughts, Jules?
I thought the first 25 minutes, 30 minutes was outstanding from Arsenal, really. I think Jamie Carragher said to the level of City and Liverpool, okay, maybe not.
But
he was very good in the way they used the ball, the movement of the ball, when they pressed. They didn't let Crystal Palace anything. And then it changed. I don't know if physically maybe they could not sustain it, which is maybe a reason.
You're tired on the first week of the season.
But if you've worked hard physically,
I know. And Palace haven't.
No. But Palace had to realize that they could not be as bad as the first half in the second half either. So they put more pressure. I was really happy for William Saliba, who was outstanding and deservedly man of the match. Really, the numbers are incredible on this game. But you saw what Zinchenko can bring you with the ball. And, you know, he tucked inside a lot and he played almost as another midfielder. But defensively, at times, there's mistakes there because, again, he's not a left back and will never really be a pure defender, you know, in the letter of the name. So it'd be very interesting to see how they go now. They've got Leicester at home, and then until October 1st and the North London Derby, they've got decent fixtures that they can get points on the board.
Saliba was a monster. I really like the way they defended against him very quick. Palace.
Yeah,
forwards.
Yeah, even White.
I agree with you with Zinchenko. I want to think at some point, when Tierney's fully fit, you know, does he become yet another attacking midfielder?
But then you lose, Tierney doesn't bring you with the ball what Zinchenko can bring you. You know, that's the thing. That's the conundrum a little bit. You would only need to mix them both.
He interprets the position differently. I think he still offers stuff going forward.
True. It was just a friendly, but not a good day for Juventus at all, as they lose at home to Atletico Madrid 4-0. Gab, and Alvaro Morata, of all people, scores a hat trick.
Yeah, then it looked like Alvaro Morata was coming back now. Federico saying, no, we're going to keep him because we need 57 strikers. look, this is not good. It's not good. They had an issue with Moise Kean, who was late, and so he was left out as a result. Rolled on the season, but a little bit like last year, it doesn't feel good going into the season.
Definitely not.
Last show, we heard how Marseille fans were moaning about Igor Tudor, Jules. The resounding victory over Reims suggests maybe some people should STFU.
Although, I mean, it's the first time I see that, Gab, a new manager on his debut, on his first ever game for the club, you know, and being announced by the stadium speaker and then being booed by his own fans, and boos were terrible.
Dimitri Payet has a lot of relatives in Marseille, doesn't
he? Well, clearly, but he said he didn't hear them because he was inside the dressing room. I think he would have heard even from there. Crazy stuff, but they won 4-1. They played some really good football at time. So let's hope that they will cut him some slack. He scores, left Real Madrid on a free transfer, Gab, and landed in Sevilla. So between him, Lamela, Papu Gomez, they're assembling a core of your favorite player. But does he move the needle?
In terms of ability, he certainly does. I'll be so curious to see where Julian Lopetegui fits him in, because he's not always the easiest guy to integrate into a side.
He's freedom.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
VfB Stuttgart and Rasenballsport Leipzig draw 1-1 as your boy Christopher Nkunku.
Who else?
Gets on the score sheet. Jules, how do they look?
Not good in the first half, I thought. Much better in the second half where they had chances they could have scored. Although Stuttgart could have scored at the end as well to win the game, to be fair. But it was I thought it was better going forward in the second half, certainly than in the first half. I thought they were a bit slow to start the game. And I'm sorry, I don't think a draw is good enough. You know, in a season like this, where Dortmund have won as well, where even Gladbach have won.
You can show some love to Stuttgart on day one.
Matarazzo, who we like, who is your pal, I understand it.
Matarazzo against Tedesco? I know,
but I was a bit like, okay. Yeah. I just hope that the end of last season, when they struggled, and there was obviously the disappointment in the Europa League, is still not there in their mind, and that they can start well, because I think it's important for them. And Timo Werner is going to come now. We will talk about it a bit, but I think they need something else, to be fair. And speaking of Leipzig and Timo Werner, Gab, two questions I've got for you. One, does he make them title contenders, and how good an addition he would be? And the other question is, does it mean Chelsea will definitely sign a replacement?
So I'm not sure he moves the needle in terms of making them title contenders, just simply because of the kind of player he is now. I don't see this magical thing. He goes back to Leipzig and then
it's
all of a sudden...
Goals, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to take a lot more than that. And I actually think if Szoboszlai and Olmo and Nkunku and Andre Silva are all fit and firing, I mean, I don't say, what do you need this guy for? But
I know, it's a strange one.
Is he better than those guys when they're at their best? So I'm not sure. From Chelsea's perspective, no, I don't think so. I don't think they should sign a replacement for him. I think they need to figure out what they're going to do. We talked earlier about, you know, Sterling through the middle. Okay, fine. I think Ziyech may go and so on, but in terms of having another center forward, at this stage, I want them just to have Armando Broja.
So Broja is your backup to have it?
I see no reason. He scored a lot of goals on a bad team last year. He's young. Rather than going out and picking up a random Arnautovic,
yeah.
you can still get a lot of minutes. It's not like Havertz is going to play every game. He can play with Havertz in some situations as well. So, you know, it's not like Havertz is the second coming of Duncan Ferguson, right?
He's got a little
more versatility than that. So, back to Paris Saint-Germain, plenty of rumors that Luis Campos is trying to pick up Fabian Ruiz from Napoli. Jules, are you excited as I am?
Nope.
And will Keylor Navas go the other way? Why are you not excited about Fabian Ruiz?
No, listen, I like Fabian.
He's tall, he's elegant, he can pass the ball.
He's left-footed, which they wanted in midfield, and they wanted someone strong, and he's 1.89 meters, and I get it.
Instead of having those little guys running around, Verratti and the rest of the Smurf squad.
The thing with Fabian is that you're excited and he's got huge potential and huge talent, and then you watch some games and you're like, okay, do something. Because at times I think he's just too like, okay. And at times he's been great with Napoli. I think he's, you know, they in what Spalletti was doing in terms of possession, in terms of that, he can play long, he can play short, he can play vertical. I get it. The you know, in terms of passing of the ball, he's maybe one of the best that you would find in midfield right now. But you've got Vitinha and Verratti already. I mean, like, okay, I think the way I see it is they want to dominate again the midfield, to be able to beat every single press, to be able to have a bit of verticality, and you need that with Messi and Neymar. But also, if they want to keep the ball for 10 minutes and you don't touch it, yeah, then you can. I'm not sure.
Is it being spell curtains for Paredes?
Yeah, I think they want a way out to Paredes.
Well, more importantly, does Keylor, because Napoli want a goalkeeper, they've been linked with Kepa.
I think this one would work as well. It could be a loan. No, if Gigio doesn't get injured, I think if Gigio stays fit the whole season, you know, you can have Rico as your backup, and then Navas can go. He's on big wages. He's the kind of guy that deserves to be a number one somewhere, to be fair. I think, you know, at his age as well.
Amazing
with the World Cup coming
that he didn't realize this last season.
No, I know. Well, you know, tell that to the Argentine guy. Gini Wijnaldum makes his debut for Roma as they smash Shakhtar in a friendly. But Gab, who had the cooler welcome video? Him or Paulo Dybala? I mean, I know the answer. Everybody knows the answer. Okay. What the hell with Gini?
So, if you see this, right? So, Paulo Dybala, we mentioned this before, it's an incredible video.
The whole city was there.
It looked like it, you know, they're all singing, massive crowds, he comes on a building, it's Rome, gorgeous, lit up. For Gini Wijnaldum, it's almost like the intention is the opposite. He looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon, like emerging from, I guess he's
from
in
the
pool.
Swimming pool, yeah.
He just with emerges out of the water with his kid. How weird is this? But hey, look, if you wanted to get attention, why not?
Someone said to him, okay, Gini, go in the pool. And he goes, well, yeah, but Dybala had the whole city singing. No, you go in the pool. And they were like, oh, poor Gini.
Valencia are letting Gonzalo Guedes go. He's moving to Wolves in a 35 million euro deal. Jules, this feels very gestifutian. Look, it's a new adjective.
I know. He's done it again, Uncle George. Amazing. Who would have thought, eh? If I told you last week, Gonzalo Guedes is going to sign for a Premier League club, you can bet, I was going to say your mortgage, not your mortgage, but you can bet a bit of money on who it would be, and then I reveal in the next show who would be. Would you have said Wolves?
I mean,
100% you would have said Wolves.
So I think I'll get to there's two elements of this. One is I think Guedes can be a really good player for Wolves, and I think he can move the needle if he gets back to where he was at.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's that far away. I think it's hilarious that they're talking about, well, there's negotiations. Valencia needs to negotiate with
there's
Wolves.
No negotiation.
They need to negotiate with, well, what the hell?
The same guy fixing the price and paying it.
It's crazy. I love it.
Crazy. Marcos Alonso was left out of Chelsea squad this weekend at Everton, and he looks to be on his way to Barcelona. Is it a good pick for Xavi at 10 million euros, Gab?
Okay, I'm just going to... There's two answers to this again, right? There's the macro answer about all the money Barcelona are spending and can they register this. We've addressed this before. Purely in a footballing sense, and I'm curious to see how Xavi uses him, I think he's a tremendous pickup because he gives you something very different. He's a tremendous dead ball player.
True.
He's got size, he's a tremendous
head
of the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
He scores goals. And is he better than Jordi Alba at his best? Probably not. He's certainly slower and he's older and whatever. But he gives you that alternative. He's a good guy to be in there. I think he's a good fit for the squad. Now, from Chelsea's perspective, again, with Cucurella, you can let him go.
Yeah.
That said, I don't know. He must have a lot of faith that Barcelona can actually register him. Because I don't think
that's the thing I don't get. That's the thing I don't get. If you're an agent or a player and Barca come, there should be, you have to be a bit wary and a bit worried about the financial situation, because they're saying to you, oh yeah, look, you can sign this contract on 150,000 a week, whatever. But then you know they don't have that money right now.
So, well, no, they do have the money. What they don't have is the right to register you if they don't. Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming people are taking a calculated risk on this. If they can't register them by Sunday or whatever, they can register them later. They'll still be getting paid. If worse comes to worse and Barcelona turn around and say in December, oh, Marcos, we're really sorry, we weren't able to make it work,
will you go on loan somewhere? And they say, sure. And then he'll still be getting paid and he goes on loan somewhere else. I mean, I'm assuming that's the worst case scenario, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So it's a calculated risk.
Still, it's a bit crazy.
It's quite the debut for your boy Aaron Ramsey at Nice, away to Toulouse.
Look at this for the Welsh.
It's not Ramsey's shirt, by the way.
No, but still, incredible. Come on as a sub with 15 minutes to go, pretty much 20 minutes to go. They're 1-0 down against Toulouse, away at Toulouse, not playing well Nice at all, and Lucien Favre. On his first touch, well, it's technically the second, but the first one, there was a foul straight after he touched the ball, so I didn't count that one. On his first touch, there's a cross, and the typical Aaron Ramsey's run from midfield into the box, hits it so well. The one that Bruno Fernandes misses for United against Brighton, it's exactly the same one, except that Ramsey scores it. Great. I mean, then he looked very involved. He looked vocal. I'm not sure what language, but, you know, because he's French, surely can't be that good. But yeah, I like that.
He looked so happy.
Yeah, he looked happy. He looked fit. They wanted his experience.
Not fit?
He just arrived the day before, and I think Favre thought, you know what, let's not away from home at Toulouse. Let's not. So he was only on the bench. But he will play the weekend in the next game. But not a good result, really, against a promoted side for Nice, but very good for Aaron to start that way. And Gareth Bale scored also the same weekend in MLS.
We'll be getting to him.
Yeah, so after several false
starts. Kiefer Moore scored too, didn't he?
And Kiefer Moore, great. Yeah, there you go. With Bournemouth, you're right. After several false starts, it looks like Alexis Sanchez is finally leaving Inter and joining Igor Tudor in Marseille, Gab.
Yeah, I think there's still some details related to how much money Inter have to pay him to go away.
Yeah.
I think those were the things that were holding him up at the end. From Inter's perspective, I'm going to say it's good or bad. It's critical because you need to get, you need to lower the wage bill, and he makes an enormous amount of money thanks to Manchester United, of course.
Yes, of course.
So that is the good news from Inter's perspective. I haven't had the best warm-up preseason. From, I don't know, you tell me, like, will people start liking Uncle Igor more? Now that if he brings Alexis, do they need
Alexis? Maybe. I mean, no, because they've got Milik, and I mean, I guess he can play wide, but there's not place for a wide player. Cengiz Under is going to struggle to play in that team as well because
the Undertaker,
because he's quite narrow. You know, the his 3-5-2 is quite narrow. 3-4-2-1, sorry, is quite narrow. So I don't know where Alexis and Milik and Luis Suarez are going to play. Plus Cengiz Under, plus Payet.
Right, this is the other Luis Suarez. Yeah. Don't get overly excited.
Not the one who scored for Nacional on his league debut. But yeah, so I'm all for. I mean, I want Alexis Sanchez in Ligue 1, of course, you know, because he's still a very good player. But for Marseille and Tudor, he would have to find the right formula and, you know, he would need to find it quite quickly as well.
Leeds United beat Wolves 2-1 as Brendan Aaronson
shines. Oh, he was
shines.
Good. Love him.
But there's no love lost between Bruno and Jesse Marsh. Do we have any idea what happened?
No, so Bruno Lage said at the end that it's during the first half that apparently there were things being said by the Leeds bench that were not acceptable, he said. So no, Bruno Lage strikes me as the kind of guy that if you get him angry, it doesn't look like the guy who gets angry easily. You think? He loses his chisel very quickly. So I don't know what happened, but Jesse Marsh came to shake his hand at the end. And Lage was not having it, and they were like kind of shouting at each other and stuff. So.
Yeah, I think Bruno said, like, oh, you know, you apologize at the time, you don't apologize afterwards, because it's meaningless if you do it during the game. What makes me uncomfortable about this, and I actually like, I like Bruno Lage,
I like the way he
presented himself last season. Well, the bar was set by Nuno, so obviously it's not hard to clear that bar. But, I think it's really dangerous when you come out and you say, he said things that should not have been said without then telling us what
exactly.
They were. Because that lets the mind run to all sorts of very, very dark places. Mm. And that's not fair to Jesse Marsh. So if you're going to accuse somebody of something, you need to make sure people know what you're accusing him about.
Yeah, that's really good. Point.
So I hope more comes out here and they do clear it up.
Yeah. Eugenio Corrini is the new coach of Palermo, Gab. Why should folks care?
Other than the fact that a club legend is coming
home.
Yeah,
of course.
No, so the interesting thing is, that I was going to talk about the previous shows, but hey, I simply forgot to put in the quick hits. Obviously, people know Palermo have been bought by City Football Group.
Yeah.
Everybody's excited. Palermo, in terms of just the size of the city and the fan base, and obviously the history in Serie A, they think, oh, look, you know, we're gonna go and sail back up. We'll be Man City Mark II or whatever. The curious thing is their manager, Baldini, who got them promoted, he quit. He quit kind of out of the blue.
Right.
And he kind of, he loves speaking in metaphors. He was so excited about going up. And And he basically said that, like, well, you know, he doesn't feel like the project is his anymore, blah, blah, blah. So they had to scramble to find a replacement. They went with Corini, who obviously has been around the block a little bit. It's interesting because, you know, we hear talk about synergy and all this stuff, City Football Group. I'm slightly surprised that they didn't get more involved in guiding this, because Corini is not a City Football Group type guy.
Definitely not.
It kind of makes me think that as these football MCOs, multi-club ownership deals go, City are one of the ones where actually the clubs cooperate with each other less than they do in other situations.
Yeah.
Callum Hudson-Odoi has reportedly asked Chelsea for a move. Borussia Dortmund's been mentioned. Yeah. So there's other clubs.
A few other clubs,
Does it make sense to you, Jules?
I think it does, which is a shame because he's got great talent and great potential. And maybe without the bad injury, he would have found a place in that team as a starter. I don't know if consistently he can be good enough to be a starter for Chelsea, but he's not going to get even the chance to prove it this season. So why staying when you know you're going to be, 80% of the time on the bench? Maybe you're going to play in the domestic cups. I don't think for a player at his age, with his talent, this is not what you
Well, especially ambition, if he is going to play this narrower system.
Exactly. So,
which, by the way, brings me back to the whole... Remember when they were linked with Dembele?
Yeah.
Like, where would Dembele have...
Or maybe it changed because you didn't get him. I don't know.
It's odd, but yeah. I want to see him play because I remember what he was like
me too.
Before he got
I think
injured.
A lot of people like him. And I think he will have clubs in England and also abroad and be really keen, you know. So I hope he can find the right place where he can really express himself and do it because he's got the potential for it, no doubt. Time for a Filip Kostić update. Gab, please. Who are his agents visiting this week then? Where are they? Which country?
They've gone back to Juve to the point that strong rumors that Kostić is going to be held out of the Europa League
final on Wednesday.
This week and not play. I don't know. To me, this seems like... I know you're haggling over money and stuff like that. I just don't see why these things need to be strung out so much. And it also seems that I would hate for this to be a reaction to the Atletico defeat.
Yeah.
Which by the way, the Atletico defeat, 4-0, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they played it at Juve's training ground. It was the weirdest thing, seeing like real live Atletico players and Juve players, obviously, playing a real game, but on the training. I don't get that. But yeah, Kostić helps, I guess. Probably, you know, and good news for Dusan Vlahovic,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so, mate.
Over to MLS, where Gareth Bale and Giorgio Chiellini starred in LAFC's 4-1 win over Real Salt Lake. One of them had a good day, the other one not so much.
So, I mean, it's pretty easy to guess who had a good day. It's Gareth Bale, who scored a lovely goal. I mean, producer Freddie was slagging him off before the show. I don't understand why. Saying like, oh, he's MLS. They're still paced. They're still skillful players and fast players in MLS. But for Gareth Bale to score like an old school Gareth Bale goal, I thought was
came off
was
the
really
bench
good.
Again.
Yeah, came off the bench again, and on that right hand side, sort of dribble past along the touchline, and then along of the corner line, and then scores. It's a lovely goal, and he's clearly enjoying it too. For Giorgio, it was a typical Giorgio Chiellini moment as well. Let's put it that way, where the ball, it's a counter attack from right. The ball is going over the top, and clearly, I think that their forward is going to be through on goal. So Chiellini just smashes literally the ball with his two arms and then gives the referee, no, I didn't do anything. No, it's not me, it's not doing anything. Gets a yellow. To be fair.
I think we're at the stage where we can about it and stuff, and like, because, you know, the big nose, and he's humble and he gives good interviews. But dude, don't do this. Don't do this.
It just doesn't look good for you.
It doesn't look good for you. It sends the wrong message.
I
don't want, you know, it's not funny. I'll tell you the thing too. Like, you're in MLS. It doesn't mean you're in a big joke. This is a competitive league and whatever. Like, don't do that.
Nah, definitely not. Gab, you love Mikkel Damsgaard. I love us Drew as well. And bet you're excited he's moving to Brentford and you will see him in the Premier League.
As you know, Mikkel Damsgaard, the next Michael Laudrup, maybe not, no reason. Look, I thought he did really well 2 years ago. I thought last season was a bit up and down,
the injury as well.
Like the rest of the team had his injuries. But he's a baller, right? That's what you call it. They lose Christian Eriksen, and they got a guy who, you know, I'm not going to, I just did compare him to Eriksen, but you have a guy who in some ways is in a similar vein in terms of technical ability. Difference is that Damsgaard has not as good a passer, but he's got the acceleration, he's got the one-on-ones, he's got a ton of confidence, and obviously he's a lot younger. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we should have seen it coming given the obvious Danish connection at Brentford, but
No, I am psyched to see him in the Premier League.
Jules, we love Lionel Messi's overhead goal against Clermont.
That's right.
Our producer, Freddie, reminded us it probably wasn't the best goal scored in France this weekend.
And he was right. Freddie's always right anyway. But yeah, because Jérémy Livolan, who you've never heard of course, he plays for Guingamp in Ligue 2 in the second division. He's 24. He's a good forward, nothing amazing, but he's a good player. Scored this incredible goal where basically, to win the game as well, where Laval in the derby, he hit a free kick first from like 35 yards and the ball sort of comes back out and he's still there. And then he volleys it into the top corner from literally 35 yards easily.
It was like
incredible.
And he just absolutely leathers the ball.
Like the pace of the ball was just like, wow. I mean, you might not find a better goal all season from all the leagues.
But you'll find it on YouTube. Just search for it.
Yeah, go for it. Yes. Gab usually give us your Bastos updates in your column on the website. But I suspect you would make an exception today.
Of course. Now he's playing his first game of the season for Utrecht. Away to Waalwijk. They're 2-0 down at halftime. What happens? Manager calls for the big man to come in. And he dominates. Scores twice. And they come up, they come off with a point, a valuable point away from home. He's now on pace to score 68 goals this season.
Yeah, but no.
Hey, you had his stats. What, he won 6 of 8 headers? Yeah. What do you want? What do you want? It's Bastos, right?
He had more aerial duels that he won than actually passes that he made.
I was concerned that I need to get another sort of folk hero guy to put into my column, but Bastos keeps going.
Yeah.
You know what? He's the same age as Mark Arnautovic.
You see, maybe he really
And he's Dutch.
United. Oh, my God.
I bet you Erik ten Hag is a
Get
number.
Him at United.
Right, because that brings us to an end. I will not be with you on Thursday. I'll leave you in the capable hands of Don Hutchinson.
That's right.
But I'll be back at some point. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.